The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Monday the 4th of October 2024 and you are on the clock with Erin Green. It is Monday the 4th of October. This was Best of the Best Weekend. I was unable to attend Best of the Best Weekend. It wasn't because I didn't have any money. It's because I was shocked. I was shocked that I wasn't in the middle class. I was stunned. I had to spend a weekend recovering myself and wondering if not in the middle class, then what this $80 for the ticket. Anyway, let's get the show started. I want you to join the Nassau Guardian as we celebrate our milestone 180th anniversary on November the 23rd, 2024. Beginning Monday, November 4th, and every day this month, we feature a blast from the past, highlighting pages from this oldest and most respected newspaper of record over the past 18 decades. Wonderful snapshots of the Bahamas transitioning from the abolition of slavery to the period of internal self-governance and independence and into the 21st century. Surprising keepsakes for history buffs or anyone who just loves the Bahamas. Oh, Texter, I see your text in response to the headline, Middle Class Families Need $10,000 a Month. But before we get to that story, I had two subjects I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to just wrap up commentary on the Kirk Cornish case, and then U.S. election talk, and then we talk in Middle Class Families Need $10,000 a Month, and a headline in one of the other papers, I think it's this paper that talks about what lower class income people require to survive. But there are all kinds of things in the news today. So if you got a paper, newspaper, a Nassau Guardian, most importantly, in your hands, you want to talk, the numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. 242-300-5720 is toll-free for Family Island listeners. And the text line powered by BTC is 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. So let's start with the Cornish case and read quickly from the article, Not Guilty, Kirk Cornish MP Cleared of All Charges. This was in the Nassau Tribune. There's a particular excerpt I want to read from that article. It says, after deliberating for under 2 hours, a 9-member jury consisting of 8 women and 1 man unanimously found Mr. Cornish not guilty of 2 counts of rape and 1 count of assault. They returned the 6-3 not guilty verdict on 2 additional charges of assault and threats of death. And here is the question that I want to ask. And here's, let me frame it first. Mr. Cornish was found not guilty unanimously, right? That's 9-0. Unanimously found not guilty of 2 counts of rape and 1 count of assault. On the 2 additional charges of assault and threats of death, they returned a 6-3 not guilty verdict. And so the question I have, I think, is an important question moving forward and considering this article. Monroe says more plea bargains needed. An article from last week's Guardian with the Chief Justice calling for a more holistic approach to crime. Was the verdict, were the verdicts returned voted or a result of the fact that the jury did not believe that these things happened? A. B. They believe these things happened, but they don't believe that these things should constitute a crime. And maybe due to the nature of the relationship. Or C, is it that they don't believe it should be punished in this manner? In the conversation with the Chief Justice calling for a more holistic approach to crime, he references 2 pieces of legislation that have been passed that he believes will result in a more efficient and effective court system. One is the Trial by Judge Alone Act. Let's go to a caller for a second. Good morning, caller.
Is that me?
Yes, sir.
Godly days are stuck in the west along with you, Aaron.
Good morning, Brayman.
And how are you doing?
I am good, thank you, Brayman. How are you doing?
I'm holding, thank God. After having a nice sweat last night at Drunk New Practice.
Go, good stuff.
Drunk New Practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I want to say to you, right?
Yes, sir.
You were always talking about that Guardian Radio and how much shares it being established and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The thing is, I wish you all would talk about the youngsters would help you all to get where you all are. When I was in school, right?
Mm-hmm.
I used to sell Guardian.
Okay. Yes.
In those days, you all used to the Guardian used to have to pick up our Guardian in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, right, we were children in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Big people never used to sell Guardian. When I say big people, the biggest people was like you all who owned the Guardian.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But what I am saying is, right, I think you all should bring people like us, not so much me, but, you know, the youngsters. Of course, I was one of them because I had to sell Guardian and go to school. And make people to know where you all really came from.
Brayman, that's a beautiful idea. I'm going to let Mr. Strawn, I can pass the message on to my boss and let them know that, hey, a suggestion was given that the paper for this month should feature as many as possible the newspaper sellers and all the other elements that caused the paper to be so successful.
Right. Now, not only that, we used to have to walk all around the place to have our Guardian sold, because the thing is, we had a talk that we don't want to stewing us when you haven't got all your Guardian sold or all your Tribune sold. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you got to move them.
You see what I'm saying?
Thank you, Brayman.
So we used to move all around the corners, you know, all over the place, Bay Street, all over the place, for people to have their paper.
Absolutely.
And I think that should be known. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Got me?
Yes, sir. I think that's a wonderful idea. As soon as I'm done here, I'm gonna shoot that message across.
Yeah, man,
feature all of the as many as possible from the beginning to today.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bremen.
You're welcome.
I'm glad to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
Same.
Yes, sir.
All right.
All right. So here we go. Again, just to close off the Cornish commentary for the moment, is it that the jurors didn't believe the testimony presented? Is it that they believed it, but they didn't think it constituted, or they constituted the various crimes or offenses ascribed? Or do they believe, but they don't believe that they should be punished in this manner due to the nature of the relationship? That's it. That's it. And because for me, when we have a Mr. Wayne Monroe, Minister of National Security, say more plea bargains are needed, when we see the energy, like I've never seen anything like it, right? A question of judge-only trials arises in the public domain, offered by politicians informally. And then all of a sudden, we have a distinguished lecture series where all of the most learned and senior judges in the country sit down to have a discussion, a debate essentially, on the matter informally raised by the executive. Right? And then without with merely a whisper, then all of a sudden we have a trial by judge alone act tabled and passed. And then there's no conversation from the Bar Association. And if there is, it's not in the public domain. No stakeholders in the judiciary in that space have offered to facilitate, to host, to organize public discourse on the matter. But I think if we can talk about this case now that it is finished, these are important questions and discussions to have, so that we could talk about when, why, how a trial by judge only, right, would be most effective or efficient. Because see, if it is a cultural thing, if it is a cultural thing and the judges come from the same culture we come from, are we expecting to see different results? It's an extremely important conversation because everybody is talking about the law except the people who the law is supposed to serve. Anyway, we got to move quickly because we got to talk U.S. elections, and then we got to talk this study. Again, Kirk Cornish, MP, cleared on all charges. What I also found interesting in this article, Cornish, I'm ready to turn the page. Progressive Liberal Party Chairman Fred Mitchell said the party is thankful that Cornish was vindicated. Quote, close quotes. Vindicated. Quote, there are no winners or losers in this case, Mitchell said. Quote, we simply thank the jury for their work and due diligence in sifting through the evidence and finding the facts, close quotes. I feel to say that was Mr. Cornish vindicated or was the PLP party vindicated? Was this result more of a benefit to the party than it was to the accused? The whole affair to me was problematic, but most problematic of all was the Saturday afternoon that the Prime Minister gave informal commentary after being, I imagine, surprised by media after leaving an event, where he said, and I paraphrase, but it has been noted both on video and in text, he questioned whether the victim had recanted. Extremely problematic. This is another, I think, example for politicians to pay close attention to in the need to ensure that they are only speaking when most appropriate. that they do not offer commentary that is unnecessary, unwanted, unwarranted, or problematic given the position that you hold in society. There's people's lives at stake. We're going to move on now. The texter said, good morning, Aaron, with reference to the Cornish case. I just felt like they shouldn't have wasted the court's time like that. Because in my opinion, this is the texter speaking, MPs don't go to jail in the 242. Just saying. It's another question that people are asking. Does the political class provide a degree of privilege that protects members therein from circumstances that ordinary people should not expect protection from? Another texter says, dear Aaron, I want to congratulate MP Cornish for beating this case. I hope there's no pun intended. And I wish him well as a free man. Good morning, texter, one of our regulars. Great show as usual. Tomorrow is election day. You know people going to work, but no one working on the job tomorrow. You know if Trump loses the election, this will be the biggest meltdown in election history because he will freak himself out. Now, when you say no people going to work, people going to work, but no one working on the job, you mean Bahamians for the U.S. election? We're going to interrogate that in a second. Texter. The texter says, I'm just baffled how a woman can be raped in two separate locations, Nassau and Abaco, and at two separate times, and the accuser did not request a rape kit to retain the evidence if she was actually raped. That sounds fishy. I remember the case in Grand Bahama, most recent, where the two tourists claimed, they said that they were raped, and they were told that there were no rape kits available at the station that they first attended. I don't think the question of whether rape kits are available, I don't think that's a question. I think we understand the limitation of the resources available to our police force. I see you, caller. Thanks for calling back. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
I don't really want to touch on that MP situation because that's a touchy one. But in regard to, I think, ruling came down that gentleman who said he hit there with a 2x4, rather 2x4 from the guy, and then hit the guy in the there with a 2x4 from the guy. And they gave him like 18 years or something like that.
Yeah, the headline is man jailed for 18 years in manslaughter case.
You didn't have a good lawyer.
This is what it's sounding like. That's what it's sounding like from what I've gathered so far from the article, right? Let me read it briefly. You want to add more commentary?
To the judge who said she was, or he or she, I don't know who the judge is, he or she, they tried to make an example of this person.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the report as well, correct?
She said, I'm reading from the article now, she said, quote, the court intends that the sentence will send a strong message to the community that justice is tempered with mercy. The court will balance the need for society to have some retribution by the convict serving some sentence for this serious indictable offense, but yet ensuring that he receives the professional assistance he requires. Close quotes.
I think some of the law for that whole situation there.
Absolutely. Let me read
the report, and I'll just listen.
Absolutely. I'm going to thank you very much. I'm going to go to the next caller, and then we're going to go straight to that report. Good morning, caller.
Aaron, I call back. I want to say something.
Yes, sir.
When we used to sell Guardian as children, right?
Mm-hmm.
I used to be on Bay Street. Of course, I used to be through the corners also. Mm-hmm. But people used to ask us, like, especially those people who were driving in their car.
Mm-hmm.
They used to drive west on Bay Street those days.
Mm-hmm.
They used to shout out on access, like, what's the headline?
Mm-hmm.
And you had to be able to could read. And if you weren't able to could read, it helped you to understand and to be able to read.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because you don't want to be shamed. You know, you don't want the people to shame you. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And you don't want the fellow, guardian sellers to laugh at you.
Yeah.
So you have to know what's the headline. You have to know how to read so you can shout it out to them.
Van Bremen, thank you, because that's exactly the things that should be captured in the story.
Right.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. So we're going to go back to the headline, man jailed for 18 years in manslaughter case. A man who disarmed his attacker and beat him to death was last week sentenced to 18 years imprisonment for manslaughter. Tomiko Dorsett, who was initially charged with murder for the January 5th, 2024 bludgeoning death of Daryl Ferguson. The charge was reduced to manslaughter because Dorsett was provoked. He pleaded guilty to the reduced charge of manslaughter when he appeared before Senior Justice Cheryl Grant Thompson in September. The prosecutor, Yukal Barnaby, told the court that Ferguson was beaten to death during a fight that he started. On the day in question, he confronted Dorsett at a park on Miller's Heights and accused him of stealing a car battery. Ferguson, who was armed with a 2x4 piece of plywood, struck Dorsett, who disarmed him and beat him to death, the court heard. At the time of the offense, Dorsett slept in a bathroom on Miller's Park and used cocaine daily. According to the prosecution, Dorsett went too far in defending himself by, quote, excessively, close quotes, hitting Ferguson in the head and stomping him. Barnaby recommended a sentence of 18 years, while defense lawyer Sonia Timothy Knowles suggested a sentence of 5 years. Grant Thompson accepted the prosecution's recommendation. She said, quote, the court intends that the sentence will send a strong message to the community that justice is tempered with mercy. Will it? The court will balance the need for society to have some retribution by the convict serving some sentence for this serious indictable offense, but yet ensuring that he receives the professional assistance he requires, close quotes. The judge ordered that Dorsett receive psychiatric and drug treatment while serving his sentence. Perhaps we can temper justice with mercy by acknowledging that the system failed this man long before he had to defend himself in this most tragic instance, matter. Let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning, Aaron. How
are
you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Aaron.
Yes.
Where's the mercy in that judgment? I don't see no mercy in that, because if somebody attacks me, and the end result is that I end up killing them, however it is, I don't have the right to defend myself.
Now, pause. What we do know with self-defense, right, is that the force used to defend yourself must be commensurate with the force of the attack.
Listen, so the policeman who is in fear for his life can shoot somebody because he's in fear for his life, but I can't defend myself because I believe that I'm in fear for my life?
I think that that is perhaps the best question to be asked so far on the matter, sir. But how does it reconcile, right, where repeatedly we hear officers use what now appears to be rehearsed rhetoric, I was in fear for my life. I was in fear that the suspect was an imminent danger to others around himself and us and myself. But because I was in fear of my life. And I remember that distinctly with the case that involved the man who was later deemed to be mentally unstable, who had a cement block and I think a screwdriver maybe, possibly, in his hand. Or maybe they were two separate instances where the officer fired, discharged his weapon, and then proclaimed, I was in fear of my life.
You know, I know that the courts and some people are supposed to be sacrosanct, but I see some decision what Ms. Grant Thompson making some judgment the other day where she said she sentenced.
So this is the spot where we are careful, right?
No. I am talking about what? I mean, listen, those judges are appointed people, okay?
Right.
And they have people criticize judges all over the world. Clarence Thomas and all them high profiling judges, they get criticized because of what ever their there was judgment. She
absolutely.
Made a ruling, right?
But
she read a ruling in a case that the fellow who was accused of raping that 13-year-old girl. She said she wants to send a message, a strong message for those kind of things. But yet we got people killing people. We have people killing people, and you don't want to send a stronger message in that case?
Well, in this instance, she may say, but sir, you agreeing with me, and that's why the penalty in this instance was so harsh. I think this matter sits on the psychological and mental status of the individual at the time of the attack, right? And so it's one thing to say that self-defense must be commensurate, but you must also examine the state of the mind of
Aaron,
the individual.
Listen here, Aaron, we are human. And when you get angry, you ain't thinking, but no. You think all you're thinking about survival. Yes, even sometimes you're like the man on the ground. Okay? Somebody killed somebody. They put 57 bullets in somebody. The person already dead. How many bullets do you need to kill somebody? But yet they still only getting, they ain't getting no triple the penalty for killing the fellow because you put one bullet, you already kill him.
I got you.
You put 47 bullets in that and you only gonna get sentenced.
Thank you. Thank you, caller. So, I got you.
Man, we are the order.
Let me close it up like this. If there is a charge on the books, right, where you are penalized per bullet, you penalize per bullet in your possession, one bullet is a year, two bullets is 2 years, three bullets is 3 years, then what you're saying is if you are using a gun to kill someone, why doesn't the sentence reflect the number of bullets used? Okay, I got you. Again, this matter here is a very tricky one because in the instance of self-defense, the force used to defend oneself must be commensurate with the force of the attack. But the question is, should the defendant's psychological status and state of mind been taken into account during the trial and not in the sentencing, and was it taken into account? Was there a psychological assessment to determine whether this individual was in an altered state due to their substance abuse and general living circumstances? And then the broader issues are, is the legislative body truly engaging the citizenry when it comes to creating law and policy? Texter, no, I did not hear about the alleged stabbing of a staff member by someone known to her. I am glad to know she is in stable condition. I will do more research on that so I can have something I can actually talk about on air. A text says, at the point of disarming, you have the upper hand and not supposed to go further. All right, let's go to the phone line and then we're going to move on to another subject. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron Cuz.
Good morning. How you doing?
Fabulous. And how? And welcome to Monday.
Yes, ma'am.
Listen, listening to what you guys are talking about, did they I wonder if they investigate the fact whether or not that this person who originally attacked the vagrant man is see somebody who usually do it, because you know you have persons who pick on them because of their condition, and you know like I guess the gentleman was saying how when you get angry, how sometimes you just lose control, and some people are like that.
I mean,
you understand?
Further to that point, would further investigation show that the deceased had engaged in a pattern of attacking this individual or perceived this individual to be a persistent nuisance in the area, right? And continue to engage them for the purpose of moving them out of the area.
Exactly, that's my point. So in some cases, it's sad to say because someone lost their life,
mm-hmm.
you know, but at the end of the day, when you provoke somebody, but even the Bible tells you, do not provoke people to wrath. So when you provoke somebody, after a while, they get frustrated with you, and you looking at these places on the street and think, there's nothing to him, though he don't have nobody, so I could do this to him on a regular basis, who cares? But now you did what you did, and this is your end, and it's sad. If you want him out of the way, if he's there and he's bothering you or hindering your business, whatever, then call the police. Explain it to them.
Mm-hmm.
The message you read just now saying, once you disarm the person, you know, that should be as far as well. No, because that person may come back for you later. You know, and that's sad. Call the police. Let them move him. Let them ask him to move.
Yeah.
It didn't have to come to that. That is sad. And I feel like that sentence is unfair because persons have look at the gentleman the other day. He raped the old lady, attempted to rape somebody else, did some robberies here and there. Look at his sentence.
Oh, you mean the young man, the 22-year-old young man that amassed 24 years in sentences over a number of crimes, but those sentences were ordered to be served concurrently, so he'll only serve the
9
years, which was the sentence applied for what is perhaps the most egregious and heinous of the acts, which was raping both vaginally and anally a senior 83-year-old woman.
Exactly. So what was the sending a message on that case?
Yeah.
What was the message sent on that case? Come on. You know, the gentleman defend himself. Yes, he took it too far, but he was defending himself. Who is out there defending this old lady now who have to live with this for the rest of her life? A man who's going to be in a few years and look her right back in her face?
Thank you very much, Carla.
Real. No, all right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You called to have to pause. And there's the producer. So when we get back from the break, 2 more headlines. Monroe says more plea bargains needed. FNM, we stand with victims of domestic violence. And then maybe you'll have to wait until till tomorrow. But we have U.S. election rundown. A snapshot of the 2024 U.S. elections. We'll be right back, you guys. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
The Nassau Guardian is celebrating 180 years, and we want to thank you, our loyal readers, for helping to make this one of the oldest newspapers in the region. We want you to be a part of our Vision Challenge giveaway promotion beginning October 28th through November 22nd. All you need to do is find the hidden Nassau Guardian 180 years logo printed every day in the Nassau Guardian newspaper, and you could win prize money. Just purchase your daily Nassau Guardian newspaper every day beginning Monday, October 28th. Find the 180th Nassau Guardian logo, cut out the page, mark the spot, write your name and phone number on that clipping, drop off your entries at our offices on Carter Street in Oaksfield, and every Friday, November 1st, November 8th, November 15th, and November 22nd, one drawing will take place. It's that simple.
Beulah Gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns? Where they hiding the drugs? Who shoot who? Who part of which gang? Or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles?
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands, or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. for all your printing needs. There ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
No matter who I marry, no matter where my wife gives birth, our children will be Bahamian, like me.
If I marry a man who's not Bahamian, I have to give birth in the Bahamas, or my children won't even be Bahamian like I am.
That don't even make sense.
That's why we had the referendum in 2016.
But the people vote no.
The government can still do something about it with ordinary legislation. And it needs to develop an action plan and timeline to hold another referendum to deal with gender inequality in the Constitution.
Oh, we can make that happen.
Go to tiny.cc/nationality to support the campaign for equal nationality rights by Equality Bahamas.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Unequal gender nationality law is a violation of human rights and a failure of the government to meet its obligations. In 2018, the CEDAW Committee told the Bahamas to set a clear time frame for constitutional reform, to integrate the principle of gender equality into all laws, and to amend the Bahamas Nationality Act 1973 for Bahamian women and men to transmit citizenship on an equal basis. Join Equality Bahamas in demanding action now. Visit tiny.cc/nationality for more.
The Ten Commandments of Man, given to a woman through the inspiration of I. Funkity, 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 yes, yes. Listen now.
One.
Thou shalt have no other man but me.
Two.
Don't tempt no man to make love to you.
Neither kiss you.
No gal, no caress you.
No, 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 no.
For I'm your man. Hey. I'm a jealous man.
Hey. Good morning and welcome back. My producer want me change the subject altogether. What you talking about, Funky D? Anyway, producer, send that song to me. I got to go and interrogate that. It interesting. I got to figure out what they talking about. Because these songs, the songs that your Bahamian artisans are making, have the content reflects the things that Bahamians are thinking, the experiences they live in, the questions that they have, all inside this music. So we got to take a look at that. But let's get going. I got to look at this headline. Monroe says more plea bargains needed. Minister of National Security Wayne Monroe said yesterday that too many cases are prosecuted in the Bahamas. Comma. Noting that increased use of effective plea bargaining would greatly reduce the court backlog. Full stop. You know what would greatly reduce the court backlog? How about y'all focus on shifting the judicial culture and cause the legal fraternity, including the women, to realize that the entire judicial system hinges on them performing as efficiently and effectively as possible. How about that? Let's include the judges and the clerks and the staff. And then let's include the managers, you know, the people who sit in cabinet and the legislature who are responsible for the provision of resources necessary for the court system to function properly. I can be honest with y'all, I'm going to continue reading, but it's just filled with a whole bunch of excuses from petty, mediocre politicians who continue to shift the bar in an attempt to make it easier for them to claim successes. We continue. However, he said that prosecutors are afraid to offer sentences that are appealing to individuals accused of crimes because of likely outcry from the public over lenience. Yes, because 9 years for vaginally and anally raping an 83-year-old woman seems lenient. But the idea that 24 years will be reduced to 9 years because the sentences have been ordered to run concurrently. Yes, we are concerned. We are not complaining. As citizens, we are registering a concern that you as a politician and a policymaker are obligated to acknowledge. Quote, in the federal court system and in the state court systems in the U.S., they only try a maximum of 8% of their cases, close quotes, Monroe told the Nassau Guardian. It's a good thing we're not in the U.S. Close quote, I mean, open quotes, that means that the number of cases we're disposing of in this country, if we had their level of plea bargaining, would be fine. But every time you have a plea agreement, somebody complains. We're going to move to page A3 about it. It's too lenient and all of the rest of it. And so then the prosecutors run for cover. They're not going to suggest sensible sentences that an accused might accept. So you don't have plea bargaining at the level of 90%. Everybody wants to go to trial, and if everybody went to trial in the U.S. system, they would have the same backlog that we have. And so that is why all of us have to be a part of the solution, full stop. I want to close quotes right there. You should speak to your colleagues and the judiciary about being a part of the solution, sir. Don't talk to us, the public, and the victims of crime about being a part of the solution to your job that you get paid for. We're going to pick it up again. Quote, you know, they trust their prosecutors. The public here doesn't seem to trust our prosecutors to offer appropriate sentences, and so they offer high sentences. Quote, individuals don't take them, and so they are on bail. Close quote. Dear Mr. Minister of National Security, can you produce the survey, the investigation, let's see, the paper, like the researchers that we're going to talk about next, use to make their assertions? Could you produce the documentation from which you gleaned your expert opinion, sir? You know, they trust their prosecutors. The public here doesn't seem to trust our prosecutors to offer appropriate sentences, and so they offer high sentences. You know what sentence is appropriate? The sentence that the legislature determined. That's what's appropriate. The penalty that y'all sat down and debated and then tabled in the House and debated some more and then passed, that's the appropriate sentence. That's why you put it in the bill. If it weren't appropriate, then why did you make it a law? I'm going to stick a pin and go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green.
Morning, sir.
How you doing? Yeah, I'd like to comment. You know, my neighbor called a while, and he was talking about, you know, and you saw me the right to defend, right? I just want to highlight, I'm even sorry for calling, but nobody seems to be acknowledging or be conscious of these things, right? Firstly, we as black people and as poor people, it seems as if we don't have the right to defend ourselves, and we don't have the right to be in fear of our lives. I said that an incident between me and the police, and I was choked. Similar to George Floyd, they had three of them, they knees on me, they shouting, they could kill me. There's the boss, and wait. I told him I couldn't breathe. So I don't have a right to be in fear for my life. This has happened more than one occasion. They almost killed me about 10, 15 years ago for a joint of weed in my throat. I eaten it, and they're trying to choke me to get it out of my throat. So a joint value my life. This is the imbecility. Also, another asinine and imbecilic concept is the fact that I heard a commissioner or somebody said they have someone in police protective custody, right? But if a bulletproof vest is illegal, I'm confounded by this stupidity, because in the States, when I lived there, you could go in the shop and buy a bulletproof vest, so I don't have a right to protect my life. Obviously, I don't have a right to defend myself. So this is, could somebody please help me? I just don't grasp it, Ms. Green. It's really the worst of the worst when it comes to us. We saw an incident about 30 years ago, 40 years ago, where a rich man ran down a guy who broke in his house and shot him quite a distance away from his home. Nothing happened. So I have to go by what he observed. I don't know what foul mouth say, you know. Bless up.
Thank you, 52. Thank you for sharing that. Here's another reason why we have diminished trust. Not in the prosecutors, you know, but in somebody, sir. I'll tell you something. I'm sitting here right now, parsing through this article, listening to the callers offer sound and, you know, contributions from their personal experiences. And then I say to myself, why am I bothering? Why am I bothering to talk about crime and plea deals? I sit here right now on the airwaves, and the only thing that's flashing through my mind is that clip of Rodney Moncur on his own show, Freedom March, right? Talking about Erin Green, are you gay? Are you still gay? You don't remember Bombay Bye, with gun fingers in the air pointing at the camera while he's calling my name. And this gentleman is a crime consultant with the state. But you have the audacity to say, and I'm reading from the article again, Monroe said yesterday that until Bahamians accept that crime is a problem that needs to be solved by everyone, it will not get better. What are y'all doing? Because as long as Rodney Moncur sits on the air making reckless statements, threatening people with violence, creating a state where people may feel compelled to act out in violence against those targeted in his speech, the Minister of National Security is telling us the crime solution is everybody's business. And then you go on to say, quote, we have a bunch of persons now 16 to 25 who have been raised in this country who have no compunction in killing people, close quotes. He said, let me tell you about another group of people. We have a group of men in this country, I'd say between the ages of 35 and 65, who have no regard for anything but themselves. And you could watch them every day on the road, risking people's lives, driving like maniacs, like big, bullish bullies. But you know what the difference is? They don't have the courage to pick up a gun. They're going to go out there and just bully anybody with their car. For the last 2 weeks, state actors have been painting a picture as if to convince us that all of this crime problem has to do with these young, what's the age group he quoted? 16 to 25-year-old men that have no sense and all they do is killing up people. How could that possibly be the case? How could it possibly be? If for one more moment you don't know who the everybody who's supposed to be helping with crime is, it's you. It's your crime consultants. It's your state actors. And then let's move to the party level. It's your party actors that are all over the place perpetuating violence as if they get paid to do it. And it turns out that many people may actually be on stipends. Whether the party consciously knows what they're engaged in or not. Dear politicians, dear policymakers, be very careful in your statements. Because for the last 3 years, you've been doing anything and everything but acknowledging your role in this process of governance. The other headline was FNM, we stand with victims of domestic violence. I just wanted to read it out loud. FNM, we stand with victims of domestic violence. Now, to the text line. Well, if we can take into account the education level of someone who had sexual relations with a minor, I think we can take into account the mental state of a vagrant. Why not? Dear texter, that's the most reckless statement ever. Perhaps you are referencing the case where the defense attorney said, essentially, it should be taken into consideration that the mental state of my client is diminished because he didn't finish 10th grade in high school. The defense attorney was suggesting that the individual had a mental or psychological deficiency because they didn't finish 10th grade in school. And you're trying to make a comparison to taking into account the mental state of a substance abuser who was attacked and consequently, in his response to the attacker, killed the attacker? Texter, we do need to be assessing education level. We do. Please, practice more empathy when you engage the public airwaves, please. Let's go to this next headline quickly. Middle-class families need $10,000 a month. UB study looks at cost of living for middle-income families on New Providence and Grand Bahama. Cost of living for middle-class families on New Providence is 100% higher than low-income families. And there is another headline. I think it is in the Tribune business section. Minimum wage family needs 350% boost to hit middle class. And I'm hoping that I can encourage Mr. Newry to talk a bit about this, because here is my thing. What's the difference, like, between a middle income, middle class family and a lower class family in terms of needs? In terms of, don't they all need insurance? Don't both lower class families, or I think better language is lower income families, right? Don't they all have the same needs? Right? We all need health care. We all need health insurance. We all, parents of families, all need life insurance. We need home insurance. We need content insurance. We need car insurance. Right? Kids need access to education and educational tools to ensure equitable, not just equal, but equitable access to education. I want to hit all of those headlines, but I want to read this text here. I applaud Leslie Archer for even attempting such a study. She is correct when she notes that certain internationally accepted economic principles like Engel's law don't necessarily hold true for the Bahamas' unique circumstances. But it seems that the study uses, quote, needs, close quotes, and, quote, wants, close quotes, somewhat interchangeably. We may want to live in a gated community, but that isn't necessarily a middle-class need. We may aspire to a monthly goal of $1,909 for savings and charitable giving, but that isn't necessarily a need. Enrollment in a $20,000 per year school may be an objective for some parents for their kids. It is certainly not a need to qualify as middle class. And see, this is my thing. I'm more focused on the language because it reveals how we think about ourselves. But it also reveals, are we in control in how we define ourselves? Or do we just think that we are subject to the norms and standards determined by the global north, by the global community, the broader global community? Because tell me, what is the difference between what a child in a lower class family educational needs and a child in a middle class family educational needs? I fear that we're talking about what you should expect. What you should reasonably expect as a person living in a lower income family. And that is dangerous language. Anyway, I ain't got nowhere to wash my clothes. I thought I was middle class for a minute there. Look at me and look at God. We're all out of time. Thank you for tuning in to On the Clock. Tomorrow, all day, we're talking U.S. elections, Trump versus Harris. Oh, and then there's some other people running as well, I bet you all didn't know, including Cornel West. So you guys, stay tuned, because Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry is up next.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.